Good evening, brethren. It's a tribute to you all that we have come together again to have a study from God's Word and to hear a report of the preaching in which I have been involved over the years. We have a scriptural precedent for this in Acts chapter 14 and verse 27. After Paul had been commissioned to go into Gentile lands from Antioch, went to several places, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, and other places. He came back to Antioch, gathered the brethren together, and gave report of what the Lord had done on his trip. So, it's always good and right for a church like this that has been sending support to men in foreign lands to have them come back and report first hand about this work. Where do we begin? As I have had the privilege of visiting with so many of you about a week ago that I've been around, there is a question that is commonly asked, and it has to do with, how did you come in contact with the gospel? When did you start to preach? How many are the members in the congregation where you preach? These are common questions. And maybe as we are gathered together, that would be a starting point. First of all, let me point out that seeing the number that is gathered here this evening marks this church out as a growing, strong church. I told some of us in Nigeria, Sunday evening services are becoming a thing of the past. I do not know whether those among you who have been to Nigeria are for one time visited those congregations you worship with in the morning. In Lagos especially, you find congregations numbering 400, 500. Go back in the evening where you record 400, 500. In some places you find 10. You find 20. What's happening? This is part of Nigerian tradition. We walk Monday through Friday, Saturday, any Saturday, every Saturday is always a party day. Wedding, funeral, housewarming, graduation, naming ceremony, and all kinds of ceremonies like that. And it is not only those who are directly affected. They give, if I'm sending my daughter, giving her away to in marriage, I give Ivy to Brother Rocky. Rocky, we have a friend. Oh, you have any place to go next Saturday? Come with me. Brother Sunday's daughter is going to wed. Rocky, we find someone, his own friend, we find someone, and invariably, everybody is involved in one ceremony or the other. Come Sunday morning, they come to worship. And that's why you find good number in the morning. And the in pain is that Sunday afternoon, women, that's the time women will go to their salon to fix their hair. Those who have fixed it or the hair has not expired, that's the time to wash children's clothes, iron them, prepare the children against Monday, and another week begins. You ask them, where were you? By the time I finish washing clothes, by the time I fix my hair, by the time I press children clothes, time has gone. This is always the excuse. And so, many congregations that even meet, you find very few people. And the in thing now is that as a result of poor attendance in the evening, many are closing the doors of assembly. That's the in thing in Nigeria. But that we were here in the morning and you still come, that's a tribute to you. Keep it up. The Lord will reward everything that we do in His name. I became a Christian, back to the real point. I became a Christian as a result of one old preacher preaching in front of my family house in Ibadan in April 1968. The focus of his preaching was the one true church. And he was saying something like, today, you find many churches around, but could you believe there is only one church in the Bible? And this church is not named after Peter or Paul or any doctrine like Baptist or Seventh-day Adventist. But it was named after Christ. Christ was the founder, he is a builder, and he is a foundation, and things like that. I was incensed, burning with anger. What was this man preaching? I rushed out. Mr. Preacher, don't you read in your Bible St. Peter, St. Paul, St. John? Said, yes, we read about all these men. They are all disciples of Christ. But he challenged me. Come and show me where Peter established any church, or where one church was named after Paul, or where a church is named after a doctrine like Baptist or Seventh Day. Then I thought, could it be true? And that was where the journey began. The following Sunday, I made a visit to the congregation where he was preaching, very close to my family house in Ibadan. And fortunately, Brother Wempe, who was the resident preacher in Ibadan at that time, attended that very congregation. Wempe is still living in San Antonio here in Texas. He preached on the one true church, and I believe now that he was using the chart prepared by Omar Ely, the one true church. That was the paper from which Brother Payne was preaching, and that further consolidated what the old preacher had preached to me. And I kept on studying with them. And the following week, in April 1968, I was baptized into Christ. And that very congregation where I was baptized fell into apostasy. The church began as a denominational group of charismatic kind of church. And after attending first Sunday, second Sunday, what I saw about the third Sunday was the bringing in of drums and choristers and the founder of the church was saying something like, "We don't want Oyinbos again. What have they brought for us? They have not given us good building. We are still meeting a mud building. So we don't want Oyinbo again. Go." And that was how I left the congregation for another. And in this other congregation, preachers were so few. And so, preaching assignment devolved on some of us young men at the beginning. And one time, 1970, in this congregation at Tokiado, it was my privilege to lead the Bible class. And I came up with a study on Matthew 24. Because at this time, we had civil war in Nigeria, which raged between 1967 and 1970. And what we were hearing from denominational preachers over the radio and television at that time was, this Nigerian war will continue until Christ returns. And this war will lead to the battle of Armageddon. But here I was with Matthew 24 before me, reading and reading and reading over and over again. Then I came to verse 34, where Christ said, "This generation will not pass away till all these things be fulfilled." I ruminated over this. And of course, it was not only in Nigeria that we have the war raging. At that time, there was a war in Ethiopia and Eritrea. The war in the Middle East, Israeli, Syria, Jordan, in that region, war was raging. And I was thinking, Nigeria alone, a country. Ghana was stable. All the other West African countries were stable. How will this localized war continue until Christ returns? So I looked at it and presented a lesson one Sunday morning. This tattooed the older men. At this time I was just 20. But we had men 50, 60 years of age in the church. And the questions that came up, it was sort of a bombardment. So, "You better watch it, this young boy. Young boys in this congregation, watch it before you bring any strange doctrine here." And what followed was that Monday morning, three of them rushed to Brother Payne's compound in Ibadan, telling him what happened in our congregation the previous day, that young boy, has come up with a false doctrine, saying that Matthew 24 has been fulfilled, and that was referring to the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem. According to what I knew later, Brother Payne said he listened to them patiently, one after the other, one after the other, one complimenting the other. Brother Payne said he asked them, "Is that all?" He said, "Yes." That's why they have come to him. Brethren, Brother Sunday was correct in his interpretation of Matthew 24. That's it. Matthew 24 up to 34, in spite of all the figurative language that I used there, has to do with the destruction of Jerusalem. this was the beginning of the interest of Brother Payne in me. So the following year it was to start a series of class. He called it Preacher Training Course. He came to me and encouraged me to be a part of that program. I did not waste any time before I said, yes, I want to be there. I want to be groomed in the true teaching of the Bible. And so I went for the 9-month course. My intention, after ending the class on Friday, my intention was to go back to my job the following Monday, because that was the time the company I was working with was flourishing. We published 3 books that was adopted by the government as textbook to be used in Nigerian schools. So from a company that was publishing or putting out copies, 2,000, 5,000 at the most, we jumped up to 200,000, 250,000, 500,000. So the company had very high expectation that it has come to stay. And I was casting my eyes on this. But then Sunday afternoon, Brother Payne came with an envelope to me that a church in Woodbury, Tennessee has heard of me upon his recommendation, and they have sent $70 for me to start preaching. I said that was not my intention, that they should give the support to someone else, that I was planning to go back to my job. This surprised him, and he asked another older preacher to come and talk to me. They came and they were telling me something like, how many of Yoruba preachers do we have? That the future of the Church of the Lord in Nigeria depends on young men like you. Take advantage of this and reconsider your stand. And that was how the journey began. I took the check, $70, and 2 weeks after, I went to Oshogbo to start a local church there. Oshogbo, where I did pioneering work in 1972, now has 4 congregations. In one of them, you count about 200. In another, 150. Of course, the last one that was begun about 2 years ago now has about 30 members in it. And that is the beginning of my journey, both as a Christian and as a preacher in the Lord's church. Oshogbo, where I started preaching, I was there for 5 years. Then I came back to Ibadan. And here is the map of Nigeria. This area is, you hear me talking about going to Elisha, Oshogbo, Ife. This is the area that is covered. And that's my area of operation. Another thing I like to point out is that from the media, you hear a lot about Boko Haram insurgency. Boko Haram is located in the northeast corner of Nigeria. And this is mainly Islamic fundamentalists. They attack Christians and church buildings, but that's not all. They show their anger on their fellow Muslims who are taught not to be following Islamic principles as it is in the Quran. Anywhere where they have a non-Muslim as a governor is considered an infidel state. And the few times, one or two times, that Nigeria as a whole has had Christian presidents, they felt the whole country has gone into infidelity as they define it in their Quran. And so Boko Haram is a reaction to one, the politics of the country, and two, the non-conforming nature of Muslims in the country not adhering to the principles of Quran, and that's why they are known as fundamentalists. And you like to see here, that is the area where our capital Abuja is. But my work is mainly in this section of the country, marked red, and Lagos, where I worked in year 2011, is on the coast. So I live and work mainly in the west, and that's Yoruba land. I left Oshobo 1977 and moved to this Koloko Church in Ibadan. This church started with Brother George Pennock. He's dead now. He was the one following his preaching, public preaching. He had a band of disciples living in the area, and the church started as Odeaje Congregation. I met them at Odeaje 1977. By 1980, the church had grown the school building we were using, and we were able to have a building along Koloko area. That's how Odeaje Church, that was known to George Pennock, Wimpin, Jim Sasa, became Koloko Church. This church in Koloko this church in Koloko that Brother Rocky and the students. Thank you. By God's grace, after moving to a permanent building in 1980, the church witnessed, by God's grace, a tremendous growth. And this growth continued so that by 1993, we set up the eldership. The eldership began with four elders and six deacons. In 96, two more were appointed. But in between this time, one has died, one has had to step down on account of the fornication of his of one of his daughters, and on and on. By year 2002, December 1, we had to disband the eldership because it has been down to just one man. Before this time, I have been finding it difficult questioning myself. I travel most of the time, and if I travel for 2 weeks, the congregation will be under the oversight of the remaining elder. And I was questioning myself, is this the Lord's arrangement? Before I return, certain decisions would have been made, and it will be announced as the decision of the elders. And by and large, by December 1, 2002, the eldership was left with just one man. And so we said, no way. And right from that time, we have been trying to teach and encourage that men should straighten up themselves, their family lives, develop their teaching skill, because one of the qualifications of an elder is he must be apt to teach, skilled in teaching. And the closest we came was last year. Another exercise, over the years we've been trying. Another exercise culminated in November last year, and it threw just two people up. And one brother Sunday was still this one and another brother. It was then I told them I was not going to serve. I know it will be scriptural since you have plurality too. But then as a person, I would not like to serve with just one man, because I like to preach. And this preaching work takes me to places that are needed. They will need me to come and answer questions, straighten them up on doctrinal issues, and at times, personal ego that try to cheer up the whole congregation. That I wouldn't be bogged down by eldership and close my eyes to what needed to be done elsewhere, and that the brethren should buckle up and make sure that we have more men who straighten up their lives to take up the job of eldership. I go back a little bit. 1997, armed robbers came to attack me in my home and battered my leg. Those who were familiar with me at that time, I put out a paper on monthly basis, Words of Life. I put it there. I said, face to face with death. It was this trauma that led me to come to the U.S. again in 1999, because they used AK-47 rifle on me at a very close range, shattering my foot. And this foot will not heal for 2 years. So when brethren in Kenosha, in Athens, Alabama, where Jim Sasa was, and Lowell Blasingham had, including our good brother here, Brother Wallace, he contributed. These brethren contributed money and brought me down here to the United States, where John Butch, a bone doctor, fixed my leg. That was 99. As I was thinking, what if I had died? Because I was already gasping for breath by the time I reached the hospital, in spite of the fact that my house was just 10 minutes drive to the UCH, the premier teaching hospital in Nigeria. And the doctor saved my life through the grace of God. But the thing is, what if I had died? What becomes of the Lord's work? And this was the beginning of our preaching on the radio. preaching on the radio, people were responding. And whenever we have 4 or 5 people located in an area, we start a church there. Whenever we have 4 or 5 people in an area, we start another local church, making members of the church at Koloko the nucleus. And this threw up another challenge. How will these new churches receive edification? How is it possible for me to be going to each of the new churches, new local congregations, to stabilize them? So this drew up the need to train younger men who will become preachers. So as I'm talking now, as a result of this radio program, we have Koloko Church starting 12 new congregations around Ibadan. And 1999 began the need to train other young men to take up the work of preaching. 1999 up to 2012, brethren in Athens and other places were sending money to us to give to these young men. We began with $50 a month. You leave your job, come and study with us for a year, up to the one we did 2009, $100. This $50, $60 a month, $100 a month, to you will mean nothing. It will just be as if you go to the restaurant to eat, you and your wife. But in Nigeria, being what it is not so. In Nigeria, you have a lot of unemployed people, graduates, 4 or 5 years after graduation, no job. As I'm talking with you, the unemployment rate in Nigeria is hovering between 20% and 30%. And it is not a strange thing to hear of somebody, this 2018, somebody who has graduated 2012, not having a job. And so, what this means is that many people are impoverished. So, $50, $60, $100 to a person who has nowhere to go, who knows next to nothing about where the next meal is coming. You think $50 is not something? So this has attracted some people in the church who have no business in preaching. And there is need for us to reevaluate whatever you are doing. And so in 2011, I thought within me, what if we say, stay on your job Monday, Tuesday to Thursday. Friday, come and study with us on weekend basis. If you can do this and support yourself, and those of you, them who have families, do that. You are free to come Friday, Saturday, study with us. No support, no allowance, nothing is coming, and we are not assuring you of any post after the class. So we began this in 2012. 6 people, only 6 came up. And to God's glory, 2 years, these 6 people are now preaching in these various congregations. Again, 2015, if you read my reports, as I sent them, another need came up. But the people who are interested this time live about 17 miles away, east of Ibadan. Six of them. And I thought within myself, instead of six people traveling from their various locations to come and meet me in Ibadan, why don't we find a strategic place around where they are located and have this training class? And that was what we did. That made me to be traveling from Ibadan to Elisha every week up to 2016. It produced six people. Just like the first experiment, what we say is that before the class ended, all these six men have been asked to come and work, do the work of an evangelist in these various locations. And the work these men are doing in their areas of operation has encouraged modern young men and not so young men. 18 now, I've shown their picture to some of you that I have visited with. Now we have 18 studying with us to become preachers. Two are very outstanding. These are men who have reached the pinnacle of their career. One is retired. Okay, the other one also has retired this past month, July. And they told me that they have decided to dedicate the remaining part of their lives to the preaching of the gospel. Another thing that is outstanding here is that we look, what will these men, how will they live while they are studying with us? And so let Americans send them $50, $60, $100. But this class that is ongoing, we have two men there, as I've said, who not only fed themselves, they give bottled water and snacks to their fellow brethren who are studying with us. And I have three other men working with me in the teaching who are traveling from Oyo, Oshogbo, and Elisha. They give them transport allowance out of their own pockets. And this is where we have come as far as the training of these men is concerned, with the idea that if they are equipped with the word of God, they'll be able to go anywhere and work, support themselves, in addition to whatever the congregation they are working with will be able to give them. We began in January and it will run till next year. And I've talked about a radio program and the number of people that are turning to it. Another aspect of my work was 2015, when I received an invitation from brethren in Wilmington. The preacher there had come in contact with a Ghanaian preacher. There are several churches in Ghana, but the work of the Lord in Ghana was a fallout of the work in Nigeria. Nigerian preachers came to Ghana to preach in the late 60s. But the brethren who came from Nigeria were institutional brethren. And what they had in Nigeria was what they planted in Ghana. So in Ghana, you find several churches, but all of them institutional. In the thinking of our Ghanaian brethren, it appears it is the idea that no church can exist without a school as the support. And so everywhere what you find there is Church of Christ, Asofua International School, Church of Christ, Asaman International School, School International must be there. And their idea of international is to distinguish this from public schools. Whenever it is international, that is private school. And they use these schools to support the gospel. And that's what obtains in Ghana. So it was very strange to them to be hearing that the church has no business in business. And I've been there. We were there 2015. They asked me to come back 2016, and I was there. And we were there also last year. So sound work in Ghana is just beginning to come up. And we pray the Lord will sustain the work. Before then, we have been involved in the work in Syria alone. And this began in 2013. I was trying to remember the capital of Syria alone. Syria alone, Ghana, along with Nigeria, were British colonies before they gained independence at their different times. And I've been involved in the work since 2013 through the efforts of Paul Earnhardt, David Dissekam, Andy Dissekam, and there are others. Phil Morgan, I've not met him. So they talked me into Sierra Leonean work. And this church, along with the church in Kenosha, I've had a part in this work in Syria alone. Syria alone is a very tough work. It's an impoverished country. So much more than Nigeria. Nigeria is a poor nation where after visiting Syria alone and the life of people there, I go back home each time to say, brethren, let us thank God. It could be worse on account of what I found out in Syria alone. Syria alone is a war-ravaged country. Not that it is poor as such. Syria alone is very rich in diamond. But the resources, like Nigeria, are in private pockets of the rulers. They come out to help themselves. And I continue to wonder why Africa is plagued with this kind of rulers who have no mercy on the people they are ruling over. Syria alone has nothing like infrastructure unless the one provided by non-governmental organizations. NGOs that I've never heard of in my life, every one of them is in Syria alone, fixing their school system, fixing their health issues, fixing everything, with the government not providing any relief for the common man. And in this milieu, what do you expect? I've never been to Syria alone, all alone, as I've done in Ghana. Maybe when I'm there all alone as a black man, I'll be able to assess the situation in its true perspective. In this type of economy, when they see a white man, they cannot distinguish between a white preacher and a white
NGO worker.
So they all are Oyibos, and they have come with dollar. And the color of the preacher is the color of the NGO man who does out dollar, who helps them fix their school and everything. And so this has been a challenge in Syria alone. You preach on the streets. If you are ready for the gospel, raise up your hand. Nearly everybody will raise their hands up because they have found a white man who will fix their problem. And this is a challenge that we are facing in Syria alone. Many people like to come when they see the white man. When we are gone, the church diminishes. When we are there, so many baptisms. The last time we were there, we were so careful to make sure that we do not just baptize just anybody who indicates interest. But we studied with them more and more to know where they stand, whether what we are trying to teach sinks into their hearts. So this is the work of the Lord in Syria alone, in Ghana, and in Nigeria, in which you have been helping us to do. On this call, before I give room for questions, I like to say thank you very much for helping us thus far. I've had a meeting with the elders, and one of them was telling me I should let them know what I need in doing the Lord's work. Well, it all depends on what the congregation is able to assist me with that will determine the level, the scope of my work. As I have said, brethren in Ghana are wanting me to come, and it is my personal wish to visit Syria alone, not with David this second, not with Andy this second, no white man, just to see a black man like them. Nigeria, a preacher from Nigeria going to Syria alone. Let me just see how they will respond to the gospel without the sight of any white man that they perceive has come with dollar. That's another area that is burning in my heart, because as I left them last year with what I see or what I saw, it's as if it is the color that is attracting them there. And the idea that white man comes with dollar, which is desperately needed. Maybe before I give you, let me give you a glimpse of the poverty in Syria alone. Nigeria is poor, but as of now, your US dollar, one US dollar is exchanged for 360. Dollar that used to be one naira before in 1984-85, that dollar is now 360. That is Nigeria. But in Syria alone, one dollar that you hold will fetch you 7,500 leones. With $100, you are a very big man. $100 will be 750,000. That shows you the extreme poverty in that country. And whichever Sierra Leonean you find, you see poverty boldly written on his face. No taxi, no car. As we move around, we go on motorbikes. Cars, vans, jeeps are for the NGOs, the politicians, the big men who are fronting for these rulers of Syria alone. So much so that when you hear over their radio series of obituaries, it will be so man who died is survived by John, USA, Mary, Italy, Andrew, United Kingdom. That's what you'll be hearing. So the people who are able to live normal lives here and go over the radio to announce their obituary are people who had their sons and daughters outside the country. But the people within the country, that's the kind of the work we are doing in Nigeria, Ghana, and Sierra Leone. Maybe I should pause here so that you have the privilege of asking questions on the areas that you want answers for. Thank you very much.
All right, do we have any questions that you'd like to ask Brother Ayodari? Anyone?
If a brother or sister gets sick, are they able to get health care, or is it so high cost they can't afford it? And they, what's the state of brethren getting treated for ailments that can just go down to urgent care and be treated for?
Did you understand his question?
Repeat, please.
Okay, he said he's a doctor, so he's sure interested in this. If people get sick, what is available to them in the way of health care? What do they do if they get sick? That's
correct.
Simply put, nothing. You have big buildings. I don't know whether Brother Rocky, did I show you UCH, our UCH? All right. Mighty building, but no equipment. For 2 years, when I was shot, I was attending the premier teaching hospital in Nigeria. They couldn't find out that I was carrying lead poisoning until I came to the United States. It was in Bowling Green. They found out that it was lead poisoning that would not allow my leg or my foot to heal. My brother, if I didn't have people like Wallace, like Jim Sasa, who knew me, like Carl Dissekam, what do you think would have happened? And that is the fate of Nigerians. So bad that the present president, shortly after assuming office, had to travel to London to get Medicare. So if that is the lot of the president who is in charge of fixing things, just imagine what happens to the common man. So that's why you find Nigerians coming to America, going to Europe, even going to India for Medicare. Doctors are there. They know what to do, but no equipment to work with. And if you are following Nigerian news, doctors are on strike for most part of the year, asking for improvement on Medicare. So people who have money and are able, they take their trouble to Europe and America. to answer the question.
That answer your question? Did everyone understand that he was shot with the AK-47 in his home?
Yes.
Okay, good. And I asked him, the city he lived in, get a feel for circumstances. He said the city he lived in is 8 million people. So you can imagine that 8 million people, no medical care, what these poor folks are facing. Good question. Of course, they've got to deal with that. Now, he did tell us in some private conversations that what a lot of churches are doing, the reason they're getting people, you come, and we'll take care of your needs. You want to elaborate on that? Whatever you need, we'll take care of. Explain that.
Before the dawn of this century, Catholic was the dominant religion, followed by Episcopal, Anglican Church. But in recent times, they've been overtaken by charismatic movements and Pentecostals. How is it so? The claim is, bring your problems to Christ, and Christ will fix it for you. So bad that one of the points they point to is, you want visa to go to Europe, to America, come. Christ will provide visa for you. And so people are trooping down there. And Pentecostalism, charismatic movements are the prevailing denominations now in Nigeria on account of the poverty that is ravaging the country.
Yeah, yes, sir. Alex?
Do you guys plan on going to Freetown in Sierra Leone eventually?
Freetown? No, I was there. The church there in Freetown.
Okay.
It's about 150, and they have elders. But we work mainly in the interland, Bo. So it's about 200 miles from the capital, Freetown. So, but there is a big church in Freetown, about 150 with elders. And Freetown is about the only town in Syria alone where you say life is, because everything, the little infrastructure they have is concentrated. And so, Freetown is not different in many respects from Lagos. Flooded with people. We call it, in our local parlance, overpopulation. Population explosion is the meaning. So, that is Freetown. But you go to the interland, nothing.
I know many of you have already visited with Brother Ayindari, but for those of you who haven't, I just found it very interesting that what we take for granted, they don't have there. No air conditioning, no electricity. No electricity. Obviously, that means no air conditioning. Everybody uses generators. So that means, like I asked him, do you have a refrigerator? Yes. We run it about 2 hours a day. And so if his wife wants to iron, they turn everything else off so she can iron. So if we look at that, we really need to count our blessings. But that's the kind of thing they're dealing with. Not because there hasn't been money, he said, but it's all going to the politicians. Any other questions? Okay, Keith.
When you travel now, or maybe when you are able to make your next trip to Sierra Leone, you said you expressed interest in doing that. Do you have travel companions? Do you have other men? Especially on that trip, you're not wanting outside traveling companions to see how they respond. Do you have other people who travel with you?
Oh, yes. Brethren who have studied with me in the past and are now preaching in various locations, they go with me. We try to do everything following the example of Apostle Paul. Paul was not alone. He had his fellow workers working together with him. So that's what we do. But going to Ghana and Syria alone, it involves a lot of money. There is just a little difference between what brought me to Chicago here in the United States from the ticket that would take me from Lagos to Freetown. Just little difference.
How much was that? I don't know.
How much?
How much was that cost?
The last time I went to Syria alone, I think I spent close, my ticket was about 400,000. That's about 1,000. Yes. Either between $850. And that's about what it cost me to get to United States. So how do I, until I tell Humble Church and the Kenosha to assist me in going to Syria alone?
$850 one way or round trip?
Oh, round trip.
So that would just be for you, not even.
Oh yes, just for me. And there, no brother's house to manage because they live in pots. I don't know how to describe it. Houses built with mud, without plastering. And so we use hotel. So we have to pay for our hotel, for our food, because the brethren there are even expecting us to give them something. Not that they are not hospitable, they like to do, but there is just nowhere with all.
Okay. Any other questions? Right in the back. Yes, ma'am. Wait a minute. You're gonna get the microphone. I want everybody to hear you.
I would like to know why the hospital, the USH, what do they do there if they don't, you know, help the people do well and you have to travel? Is that no doctor? And one more question. Sierra Leone, you said that if it's a white preacher, the people come. But when there's a black preacher, nobody comes up. I don't know if you said that, but that's how
thank you. Thank you very much. There is a bit of misunderstanding there. The three times I've been to Syria alone, I've been in the company of white men, David and Andy, and one time with David and Andy, the second Rick Ligon in Illinois. I've not had the privilege of being there all alone. So these white brethren have always been with me. So what I was saying was, let me go alone and see how responsive they will be to the gospel. Because they cannot distinguish between a white man who is a preacher and a white man who is an NGO official. Now the NGO officials are the people fixing their water, fixing their school, fixing their health care, and everything. So here is another white man who owes the Bible. There is no way they can know. This one who is an NGO man who has come with dollar fixing things, wear the same skin the preacher wears. So white man, white man. So they expect from us to fix their problems. But that's not the reason why we are there. And so nearly everybody wants to say, I'm ready for the gospel. But let me just see. Here is a black man preaching. How would they respond? No white man now, but I have not had that experience. So that's what I'm saying. And with regard to health care, do not misunderstand what I'm saying. Nigerian doctors are not behind in skills. From reports reaching us, they have come to acquit themselves here in America, in Europe, and other places. In a private conversation, somebody has told me that she works with a Nigerian nurse, and this Nigerian nurse is superb in skill. But what's the problem? The problem is no equipment. What can you do when all the money that will provide equipment is in private pockets of the politicians? So that's the problem. And one more point. The more you ask these questions, the more other things come to mind. Brethren, Nigeria has no business being in the league of poor nations of the earth. You have people here, oil workers, they can attest to this fact. I was with Todd yesterday. Up till now, nobody can account for all the oil that goes out of the country. Nobody, because no record. Our oil industry started in corruption, and the festering in corruption, the military rulers, all of them have oil rigs allocated to them, and they take this oil freely out of the country, refine them outside, and bring this same oil back to Nigeria and sell at international prices. That is the bane of Nigeria and Nigerian society. Nigeria is very rich. It's number 6 in OPEC, but it's one of the poorest countries of the world. The same petrodollar that has transformed desert countries like Saudi Arabia, like Qatar, like Dubai. You go to these places today, Dubai, Doha, and other cities in the Middle East. You have the feeling that you are in an American city. The same petrodollar in Nigeria is in private hands. And the only way you see this is when you go to Abuja, the federal capital, which is built to show the world that Nigeria has arrived. And what do they do in Abuja? They wall off the areas where poor people live so that their foreign visitors will not see how Nigerians live. But all you see is flyovers everywhere, and you think all is well with Nigeria. No. So, Nigeria is rich, but filled with poor, poor people.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, thank you, Brother Ayindari.
Once again, I thank you for the privilege and the opportunity you have given me to say these few things about the work that I do in Nigeria. Above all things, we need your prayers. Put up, and you are doing a good job in this. Please, keep it up. Your brethren are living and worshiping God in difficult and harsh situation. But we know this is not where we have our citizenship. Our citizenship is in heaven. When the Lord returns, it wouldn't matter whether you are living in Nigeria or Congo or America or Europe, because we are all going to share the same heavenly city in heaven if you hold the faith to the end. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Well, at least a couple things we can take away from this. One, I know we're glad we have fellowship with Brother Ayodari. And secondly, every one of us, I hope tonight before we go to bed, is going to be thanking God for where we live. We are very, very richly blessed. And so, years past in this country, men blazed the trail. We're benefiting from it today. Men studying the truth, leading them out of denominationalism and error. I'm the beneficiary of that. Now, Brother Ayodari and these other men are blazing the trail for generations to come. So pray that they might be successful in that. Wally, you have anything? Craig? No? Okay, I want to thank everybody for being here, for staying. It's been a profitable evening. Glad Brother Ayodari is with us. And so if there's nothing further, you'll be standing. The one appointed to lead our closing prayer will now lead us in prayer.